walking through the Gospel of Mark. And somebody asked me the other day, said, hey, when do we end this series? And I'm like, why? I mean, are you tired of it? What I mean? And they were like, no, just when are we going to end? Well, the Gospel of Mark ends with the resurrection of Jesus. So guess when we end the series? On Easter, okay? So so we're going to end on Easter, and then we'll kick off another series. We're walking through the Gospel of Mark, and we're looking at the life and the teachings and the ministry of Jesus so that you and I can see who the real Jesus is and what the, you know, what he was really about. And in today's passage, we see very clearly what Jesus came to do. And just let me read it, verse 45, to kind of set the table this morning. Verse 45, Jesus says this, and we're going to come back to this. He says, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. So that Jesus, he right there, he sets himself apart from every other religious founder in the world. Because you look at other religions and the founders of these religions, every other founder would say, hey, live like I do. I've come as an example. And if you live as the example, you can obtain whatever it is that you're trying to obtain. But Jesus says, no, I've come to live the life you can't live and die the death that you deserve. And that sets him apart from any other religion in the entire world. And so we see two observations, really two questions this morning about the text. And let me give them to you up front and then we'll unpack them as we go along. But the first question we're going to ask the text is, why did Jesus come to die? Why did Jesus come to die? And the second question is, how should that change us from the inside out? How should that change us from the inside out? And we just need to know up front that there's a difference between Christianity and religion. Religion says, how can I change from the outside in? In other words, how can I alter my behavior, modify my behavior so that I could do good works and get into heaven? Okay, that's religion. Christianity says that Jesus came to live the life we can't live, die the death that we deserve, and he changes us from the inside out. So that's where we're heading this morning. If you have your Bibles, turn to Mark chapter 10 this morning, Mark chapter 10. And let's look at this first question of why did Jesus come to die? Why did Jesus come to die? So let's go back to this verse 45. Jesus says, for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Now let's look at a couple of these words. That first word for, it's this little Greek word, anti. And what it literally means is instead of or in place of. So it literally means substitute. And Jesus came to be our substitute. He came to be our ransom, okay? He came as a substitutionary sacrifice for us. Now I don't know. I know we don't talk about ransom very much in our vocabulary. I mean, I don't, you know, it's just, or unless you're watching an FBI movie or something, you hear about ransom. But a ransom is a sacrifice or a payment to buy the freedom of a prisoner. Now, that's what a ransom is. You're simply buying the freedom of a prisoner. So knowing these two things, let's go to verse 35 through 38. Said, then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. These are a couple of his disciples. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. And what do you want me to do for you? He asked. And they replied, let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory. And you do not know what you are asking, Jesus said. Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with? Now, in the Hebrew scriptures, the word cup, okay, almost exclusively refers to the judgment of God. That when you read the word cup in the Hebrew scriptures, it almost exclusively refers to the just and holy judgment of a righteous God. That's what this is referring to. And Jesus says, I'm going to drink the cup on your behalf. I'm going to make this payment on your behalf. that I'm going to be condemned for what you've done, by the way, not for what I've done. I'm going to be condemned so you don't have to. And the word baptism here is being used to describe this all-encompassing, all-immersing, overwhelming experience. And what Jesus is saying to us is that I'm going to go through this immersion, this overwhelming experience, that I'm going to take upon myself the cup of wrath, the cup of judgment, the judgment of holy God, and I'm going to pay the ransom for the souls of humanity. And let's just let that sit there for a moment. I mean, let's really think about that. I mean, we get so caught up into sometimes, and we want things to be fair, right? We just want things to be fair. But we don't want that when it comes to our sin. Because if God were to treat us fairly, it would mean that we are condemned because of our sin. And that's what makes the gospel good news, not fair news, is that Jesus came to live the life we can't live. And he came to die the death that we deserve. And that's not fair, but that's good news for us. Amen? Amen. Okay. So the question needs to be asked then, why did Jesus have to die? If God is such a big God and he's such a loving God, why couldn't he just forgive everybody? Why couldn't he just wave his hand and say, you know what? Everybody's forgiven. Why did Jesus have to die? And the answer is found in the substitutionary sacrifice. That all life-changing love is a substitutionary sacrifice. All life-changing love is a substitutionary sacrifice. And there's probably two realms that we see this the most. The first realm is parenting. Any parents? I know a lot of us. Okay, if you're a parent, you know what sacrifice is, right? I mean, when it comes to children, I mean, they come home from the hospital. They don't do much but eat, sleep, and poop, right? And so you have to make sacrifices. You're sacrificing getting a good night's sleep because they're waking up, you know, at, you know, ungodly hours during the night. And then they're teaching them how to crawl and how to walk and how to talk. And then elementary hits. And then, you know, you're taking them all these places and getting them on all these teams, and you're doing homework. And, you know, once they get to about the fourth grade and fourth grade math, you know, some of us as parents, myself included, are helpless when it comes to that. Okay. But they're sacrifices. And then they become teenagers and the sacrifice becomes even bigger. We know about this. As parents, we know that we basically have to body slam our life goals and plans for about 18 years to make a sacrifice. But we also know as parents that if we want our children to grow up to be healthy and self-supporting and well-adjusted, mature adults, we have to make that sacrifice. But here's the deal. As a parent, the sacrifice is temporary. The sacrifice is temporary, but it's redemptive, right? It's redemptive because we have a goal that we want our children to grow up. The other realm that we see this substitutionary sacrifice is when it comes to forgiveness, right? I mean, there's just something in us. When somebody wrongs us, we want to make them pay for what they've done to us. Somebody says something about us. Somebody ruins our reputation. Somebody steals something from us. Somebody rejects us, isolates us, whatever it is. And I don't know about your philosophy, but my philosophy, my first tendency is, listen, no big deal. I'm not going to get even with you. I'm going to get better. All right? I'm going to get better. And then it just starts that cycle, right? You know, they attack us, so we attack them, and then they attack us back, and we attack them, and it's this unending circle of hurting one another. But to go back to this statement that all substitutionary love is, or all life-changing love is a substitutionary sacrifice, if we choose to forgive them, and as Christ followers, that's what we're called to do, right? Because Jesus says to us that we need to forgive others the way we've been forgiven. And for those of us who put our faith in Jesus, we've been forgiven of everything. So as Christ followers, we're to forgive. Now, I'm not talking about reconciliation and make the relationship what it was. I mean, some of those are just beyond repair. But to get to the point to say, you know what? I forgive you. In other words, you don't owe me anymore. I don't want a relationship. You're not welcome to be around me, but I forgive you. If we're going to really forgive, we have to consume the debt. We have to make the sacrifice. We have to consume the suffering. See, all life-changing love is a substitutionary sacrifice. And we know that. I mean, anyone who has done anything of significance for us that changed our lives, made a sacrifice for us. And here we have a holy and just God doing something about our sin debt that we have willingly accumulated. And so he could not just sweep it under the rug. He couldn't just look the other way. He couldn't just box up our sin and put it on the top shelf in a closet and forget about it, because sin requires sacrifice. Atonement requires sacrifice, and there had to be a sacrifice made so that we can either pay it or Jesus can pay it. And Jesus chose to be the substitutionary sacrifice for us, and this is what makes God different from all the little g gods out there. See, every society to some degree has understood judgment. They have some concept of judgment. They have some concept of punishment. They have some concept of justice. But the idea of God himself coming to be a substitute sacrifice for us doesn't make any sense to the world. But why did Jesus have to come and die? He had to be a substitutionary sacrifice for us, because only a perfect sacrifice can cover up our sin debt. And Jesus is the sacrifice that all other sacrifices pointed to, and he's the last sacrifice to ever be made for us because he loves us. So that's why Jesus had to come and die. So how should that change us from the inside out? You see, the world views human greatness as an accumulation of power and control. I mean, it just does, right? We elevate people of power and control, but the cross shows us something different. The cross turns that upside down. The cross says that human greatness is a matter of humility and service. Look at verses 32 through 34. It says, they were on their way up to Jerusalem, with Jesus leading the way, and the disciples were astonished, while those who followed were afraid. Again, he took the 12 aside, and he told them what was going to happen to him. He says, we are going to Jerusalem, he said, and the Son of Man, which is him, will be delivered over to the chief priests and the teachers of the law, and they will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles, who will mock him, spit on him, flog him, and kill him, but 3 days later, he will rise. Now, this is the third time in three chapters that Jesus has told his disciples about his impending death. He tells them in chapter 8, he tells them in chapter 9, and he tells them in chapter 10. And it's almost like the disciples are like, we're not listening, we're not listening, we're not listening. This doesn't compute, this doesn't make sense. We're not going to listen to that. But he's telling them. You see, if we fully understood the cross, it would turn our lives upside down, especially when it comes to how we treat others and how we view ourselves. See, if we embrace the cross, it's going to change the way we treat others, and it's going to change the way we view ourselves, and it's going to do that through humility. And so there's two types of humility that the cross leads to. There's personal humility. Okay, look at verse 35. It says, then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. Now, that's not a great way to start a prayer, right? I mean, that sounds really bad when you say it out loud. Jesus, do whatever it is that we ask. But you know what? We do the same thing. We're just better about it. We're just a little bit more creative about it, because what we do is we start our prayer with, Lord, thank you for today. That kind of softens the blow a little bit, right? Kind of we're warming up to the big ask. We're saying, you know, Lord, thank you for today. Thank you for my kids. You know, thank you for my job. Thank you for all the stuff that I've accumulated. And oh, by the way, Jesus, I need you to do this, 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 that, and this, and don't do this, and make this happen. And, you know, here's the want list. And then when it doesn't happen, sometimes we just get mad and we bail out on God and his church. Because, well, you know, we're like, well, I tried that prayer thing once and it didn't work. So, you know, I don't really have time for that. Verse 36 says, what do you want me to do for you? I mean, Jesus is so patient, right? I mean, what if one of your kids says, hey, I want you to do whatever I ask you to do? Yeah, right? Uh-huh. You know what? Why don't you go upstairs and you think about what you just asked and come back with a different question, okay? Jesus is so patient. And they replied, let one of us sit at your right and the other sit at your left in glory. You see, they're thinking that they're on their way to Jerusalem for Jesus to assume the throne, for Jesus to take over Israel and to sit on the throne. And they're saying, hey, Jesus, make us your top two cabinet members. It's basically what they're saying. And obviously, these guys don't have a clue of what they're asking. Verse 38, he says, you don't know what you're asking. Jesus said, can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with? We can, they answered. And Jesus said to them, you will drink of the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I'm baptized with. But to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those whom they have been prepared. Now, to follow Jesus into his glory means that we do it with humility and we do it with service. It's this whole concept of, you know, the way up is really the way down. That we serve instead of be served. We release power instead of accumulate power. And the cross is so counterintuitive to what we naturally want to do. But before we dismiss James and John as egotistical maniacs, we need to ask, is there an area of my life that I'm missing the boat? Is there an area of my life that I'm blinded by my own sin and my own flesh and my own pride and my own ego? Man, there's a lot of times that we'll just grab a Christian post and we'll slap it up on our, you know, social media, you know, this Christian post or this Christian post, and you know, we'll position ourselves like we know it all, and we're doing right, and we get everything 100% perfect, and we have all the answers, while at the same time we're harboring unforgiveness towards a family member. Or unforgiveness towards a coworker, or unforgiveness towards a friend. And sometimes we are so quick to point out where other people are missing the boat. We're so quick to point out where other people are struggling, or where other people are messing up, but we don't dare come close to being vulnerable or transparent with them, because we have convinced ourselves that we're the example. And that we have an image to protect. And what we've done is we've let our pride and ego get in the way of us embracing this upside down way of life where service and humility is what the cross brings. So it's personal humility, but it's also communal humility. Look at verses 41 through 45. It says, when the 10 heard about this, about what James and John had said, they became indignant with James and John. I bet they did. It's like, who do you guys think you are? You guys think you're better than us? You guys think you deserve to sit at his right hand and his left hand? No. I mean, they become pretty mad. And Jesus called them together and said, you know that those who are regarded as rulers over the Gentiles, that's the non-Jewish, lord over them. And their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. Whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. See, Jesus is talking about how most people try to influence society, how most people try to get their way, and they use their power and they use their control for their own good. But Jesus says, that's not the way I want you to operate as my followers. I want you to be different. You know, and you know, if we go back to Jeremiah 29, and you know, and probably most of us have heard Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. I mean, that's a good one to post on the social media right there. Let's just grab that. Let's put that. Yeah, I want to prosper. Man, the Lord wants me to prosper. He knows the plans that he has for me. Let me give you a little context to that verse. The nation of Israel had become so prideful and egotistical and rebelled against God so much, God allowed them to be conquered by the Babylonians. And so Babylon comes in and they conquer Israel and they tear down Jerusalem. They level the houses. They level the city walls that once protected Jerusalem. And the Babylonians, they bring an exile amount of people, Israelites, back to Babylon, and they live there as captives. But I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you. And they're living in captivity. Now, what do you think the attitude would be of the Israelites? They've been conquered. They've been defeated. They've been humiliated. They've been dragged from their homes that were destroyed, leveled. And now they're being forced to live in this pagan country in the city as captives. I mean, they probably naturally said, you know what? We're going to make the best of this. And we're just going to interact among ourselves and ignore what's around us. Or maybe they said, hey, you know what? Let's get together and let's, you know, if we can't conquer the Babylonians, at least let's disrupt everything. But God says to them, this is the rest of Jeremiah. He says, I want you to seek the peace of the city and pray it would prosper. God says, I want you to make that a great city for all the pagans to live in who don't believe what you believe, who are opposed to what you believe. And I want you to serve them as your neighbor. I want you to love them as your neighbor. I want you to pray for that city and seek to make it the greatest city on earth. And here's what Jesus is saying to us. Is the ordinary way people think to get power is to take power. But Jesus says, I have a different approach. I want you to make yourselves, as my followers, so sacrificially loving to the people around you. I want you to serve the people in your office. I want you to serve the people on your football team, on your volleyball team, on your baseball team, in your band, in your classroom. I want you to serve your students. I want you to serve your family. I want you to serve your friends. I want you to serve your neighbors. And oh yeah, even the ones who don't believe like you believe, and even the ones who are opposed to what you believe, I want you to serve them in such a way that they can't imagine the city, the campus, the office, the neighborhood without you. I want you to be so loving and so sacrificing and serve them to the level that they could not imagine what this city or this campus or this office would look like if you left. Jesus says, I want you to influence. Use your influence so that they will trust you because they will know that you're for their good. See, influence that comes from power and control, it really doesn't change anything. It may change something in the short term, but it doesn't change hearts, and it certainly doesn't change society. And the way that you and I gain influence in our society is to become humble servants. And we serve for the good of our city and the glory of God. And as the band comes, I just want to close our time with this quote by Jonathan Edwards, who was a great theologian in the 1700s. And he wrote this. He says, if you don't believe the gospel of grace and you believe that you are saved by your works, then you've never done anything for the beauty of it. You've done it for yourselves, which is selfish. Only seeing Jesus as our substitutionary sacrifice will free us from thinking that we have to do all this stuff to improve our standard with God. Seeing Jesus as our substitutionary sacrifice is the only way we can get our focus off of ourselves and we can serve those around us. Seeing Jesus as our substitutionary sacrifice is the only way to have freedom of sin, to be freed of the debt and the penalty of our sin. Seeing that he really did come to live the life we can't live and die the death that we deserve frees us then to serve. So we're going to be reminded, we're going to take communion this morning.